Avenue for April 5th, 2007 will come to order. We have four bills set for public hearing. As I review the sign-ups for witnesses for these bills, we have one person who is from more than 100 miles away, so we will open that work session first. And that's the public hearing on that work bill's first, and that is House Bill 2968. We'll open the public hearing on that bill. Go ahead, Mazin.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2968, in a nutshell, changes or attempts to change the basis of taxation on one of the other tobacco products, which is moist snuff versus dry snuff, of course, from a wholesale price base where we have it at 65% of wholesale price today in the system of taxation, into a new way of being taxed by weight. And the weight unit is an ounce that is chosen here today in the bill. However, the amount, the number of cents or dollars per ounce is not defined in the bill at this time. And the other types of other tobacco product is not necessarily in any different definition besides this one at this point. And if you wish, Mr. Chair, I also asked the Department of Revenue how that would also change the processes of administering the tax, and at length of time, if you, after hearing the witnesses or the proponents and opponents of the bill, if you'd like to know more about the administration aspect of it, I think they would be here and able to talk about it.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Gary Oxley and Monty Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. For the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you this afternoon on behalf of United States Tobacco, UST Public Affairs. To my right is Mr. Monty Williams, who is a tax consultant for UST. First, I would like to take an opportunity to thank the committee for the introduction of House Bill 2968, which UST supports. This bill is a change in the methodology of taxation of moist snuff, commonly known as other tobacco products, or OTP. And this committee is very familiar with that terminology based on the number of hearings that you've had on tobacco-related taxation issues. From the outset, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to emphasize that this bill solves a major problem for the state as it relates to the revenue that comes from the taxation of moist tobacco products. The opponents of this bill will attempt to characterize this as a solution looking for a problem. And I think you will see, as Mr. Williams will graphically illustrate this afternoon, that the state will experience a loss of OTP revenue if we do not change the methodology of taxation. The spiral on the revenue of this product has started, and without a floor, the spiral will continue, and revenue will decline and decrease. And also, the industry will be coming forward with additional cheaper products hitting the market, either as a to be established as a traditional product or an introductory product. I would refer your attention to page 3 of the bill, House Bill 2968, and line 5B, as you will note, is blank. We have an equivalency to replace the 65% wholesale price, or tax, excuse me, that will be $1.68. So the equivalency that we will be talking about during the course of this hearing will be $1.68, which will replace the current 65%. I will ask Monty, during the course of his presentation, to speak to the current tax, problems which are inherent to the 65% wholesale price and that taxation methodology, and the solution to that problem that this bill provides. Again, I urge you to keep in mind this is not a solution looking for a problem, but a solution to a very serious problem pertaining to tax revenue collected on OTP products. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Mr. Williams to walk the committee through the bill and through the intent of the change of this tax methodology.
Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Monty Williams. I'm a partner in a national consulting firm that deals with alcohol and tobacco tax-related issues. I spent 30 years with the Board of Equalization in California. I was chief of excise taxes there and chief of criminal investigations for that agency. I was responsible for over $3 billion in the state's revenue in California, and I have over 20 years' experience in the tobacco tax administration and enforcement area. I'm here today representing United States Smokeless Tobacco, the makers of products such as Copenhagen, Red Seal, and Husky. We have products in all of the pricing categories in this area. I'd like to talk to you today about two items relating to this bill. The first is the problem as we perceive it and how we got here, and the second is the issue of the ad valorem tax and its impact as a tax escalator. Excise taxes, by definition, are a consumption tax. They're generally passed because there's some social issue they want to address. All of the excise taxes in this state, with this exception, such as alcohol, gasoline, and cigarettes, are all based on a per unit amount. It's a consumption tax. The more that you consume, the more taxes received. The less that's consumed, the less you receive. When this tax was adopted in 1986, the category of other tobacco products, which is everything but cigarettes, is made up of two major portions. One is the round cans of moist snuff, which accounts for a significant portion of your revenue, over half in this state. The other part of the category is all the other products, such as chew, plug, pipe tobacco, roll your own, all those types of things. When you look at the category as a whole and try to come up with a unit base back in those days, it would be very difficult. And there was only one pricing point for the moist snuff at the time, and that was the premium level. So basically, by establishing a percentage price, you ended up with an excise tax is what it was supposed to be. Every can paid the same amount. And that's what you had back in 1986. And that was true all the way up to late 1990s. For example, in 1989, I had to establish a tax on OTP in California. I looked at the marketplace at that time, the same as all the other states did, and we went ad valorem in California. If I had that decision to make today, I would not do it the same way. 3 weeks ago, Iowa became the 10th state to go from an ad valorem to a weight-based tax on moist snuff. In Pennsylvania, which does not currently have a tax on other tobacco products, the governor has proposed in his budget to place a tax on other tobacco products, and the moist snuff category is in his budget as a weight base. Since 2001, seven states have started taxing or switched their system from ad valorem to a weight-based system. And there's reasons for this. Since 2001, the marketplace has changed significantly. There was only one pricing point when this tax was established. Today, there are seven different major pricing points in the category, and they range from $3.01 at wholesale down to 81 cents at wholesale. So currently in Oregon, you get $1.96 in tax on this can, and you get 53 cents in tax on this can. That's not what the state intended when they passed the excise tax. It was the same amount per can. And we have products in all of the categories, the three major tiers that make up these seven pricing points. Since the tax system is not kept up with the marketplace, Oregon is now receiving an average of 16% less on each can of moist snuff sold in the state than it did in 2002. And this will continue.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
16% less per average can, weighted average can sold in the state today versus 2002. Excuse me.
Thank you.
In addition, the excise tax at retail can make up to $1.90 in difference in the retail selling price simply based on the excise tax structure in the state. And please remember, we're discussing an excise tax here, not the sales tax. There is a sales tax on this product too, which is a percentage of the retail price. Under this system, ad valorem taxing of moist snuff, companies can manipulate the system to adjust not only their prices but their tax liability. For example, in 1993, Marlboro lowered its tax or lowered its wholesale price on cigarettes by 20% to increase its market share. That had no impact on the state's excise taxes because it's a per stick, it's a per unit base, so you don't care what they sell it for. You get the same amount of taxes. However, in 2004, this company lowered its wholesale price 30%, which is what any company is allowed to do. But by doing that, they also lowered their tax liability by 30% on this product. This company last year lowered its price by 45%, thereby reducing its tax liability on its products by 45%. You had no say-so in this. It was just a reduction in the tax you receive in the state simply based on the company's pricing policies. And what that can lead to is these types of products, 49 cents at retail. These are not introductory products. These are not new products on the marketplace. These products have been around since 2001. But now what's happened over the last year is these companies are reducing their prices in order to gain market share, to drive people from the higher-priced products to the lower-priced products, which is their prerogative. But the tax system in the state is contributing to their ability to do this. Now, while they may pay their same amount of tax that they should on these cans, only the revenue department could determine that, the problem is if under our ad valorem system you can do this because of the differential in the taxes. If you're paying $1.96 a can, it's a lot different to eat that amount of tax versus 53 cents a can to do promotional items. These are geared towards one major category, and I think we all know who that is. Under an ad valorem system, you can do that. Your system can be gamed. The state can get its revenues determined simply by the prices that people want to charge, all the way down to 49 cents a can. This package of Bronco cigarettes, which is equivalent to a real sub-price value product in the cigarette category, pays exactly the same amount of tax as the Marlboro's pays. However, this can of Skoal pays $1.43 in this can of Longhorn. Same types of products, different policy on how much tax each one pays. That's not what an excise tax was supposed to do. Same products, same tax. I would now like to discuss the automatic escalator issue. You'll hear from opponents that this tax in an ad valorem is the tax that keeps on giving. Every year when the prices go up, you get more taxes. And I'll have to tell you that that was pretty much true until about 2001. But with the introduction of these cheaper products and the market being driven down to these cheaper products, the tax you're receiving, as I said earlier, has gone down on every can sold. And in 2002, what happened in Oregon was price increases and can volume increases could no longer compensate for the downtrading to the issues. You basically here with the tax system are subsidizing cheaper tobacco products over the premium products in this category. So the state's participating in this product pricing. These products at the cheaper category have gained a market share from 0 to 38% in 2006. And over a period of 6 years, they gained that much market share. And as a result of that, that's caused your tax per can to go down. So while from 1 year to the next you may look like you have more revenue, the fact of the matter is you're not getting anywhere near the revenue that was anticipated when you put this tax into effect. And this problem will continue to happen as long as you stay with an ad valorem system. Price increases can no longer keep up with the amount of down trading. Therefore, your revenue will continue to go down in this category each year based on an average can.
Mr. Chair.
I do have a question, if I may, for Monty, Mr. Williams. Monty, the two cans of chewing tobacco there are that have this significant difference in tax, state tax collection under the current methods, are those roughly the similar weights? I can't tell. But
yes, actually, these two examples, this one's actually a little heavier than this one. This is 1.2. This is 1.32 ounces, I believe.
So the cheaper, the one that we get the less money on is actually a
more product.
Than
this
okay.
One is currently.
Thank you.
And there is a slight fluctuation in the can sizes.
And let me follow up on that. How about the other two, Grizzly and... The Longhorn is one of the 49-cent ones, is it?
Yes. Yeah, Chairman, yes, it is. This is their 49-cent version of this.
And how much does that weigh?
This is the same weight as this, 1.32 ounces.
And the Grizzly?
And the Grizzly is 1.2 ounces. The 49-cent product's the exact same can as their regular product that wholesales for $1.30.
See what we're thinking. We're trying to figure out how they can do that. And one way, of course, we'd to put less in the can. But it sounds like they haven't done that.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, it is the same amount in the can, and they buy it down in the states in order to gain market share. And their market share has increased significantly as a result of this type of promotional product that they do. All companies do promotional products. UST's introduced a new product in the last year. It's testing in two cities right now in the country. And their introductory sales price for this brand new product was lower than it normally sells for, which, you know, it's a tier two product in the middle of these.
Mr. Chair, my kids have been telling me this Grizzly can was actually chewing gum. All this time I thought it was chewing gum.
I think you have some discussion to have at all.
49 cents a can. I couldn't imagine it was anything other than chewing gum.
Thank you. Are you planning to talk at some point about demographics of who it is that are likely who actually buys these products?
Mr. Chairman, no. I'm more here for the tax and the tax
outside
policy
of your
perspective.
Issue.
It's about outside of my area.
Well, you've indicated that the low cost brands have gone from 0 to 38% in some period of time. I didn't note the dates, but
2001 to 2006.
Okay, just in the last 5 years.
Yes.
Okay, but you don't have any information about who's actually buying those inexpensive brands.
I can take you to Crane High School one weekend.
Yeah, it's not.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Fine. I was going to just finish up this carrier saying this tax system is an escalator still, but today it's a down escalator. It's not an up escalator. We're racing to the bottom to see who can sell the cheapest product, pay the least amount of tax, and impacts the state revenue. These issues are costing the state of Oregon, in our estimation, between $9 and $10 million a year over what you should be getting when you pass the tax over what you thought you would be getting. Opponents of weight-based can say many different things to keep the current system in place. They do not want to give up the subsidy on these cheaper tobacco products, which are making up the biggest part of their market share now. This product, Grizzly, is manufactured by Conwood, which is owned by R.J. Reynolds, Reynolds America. They paid a significant sum of money for that company last year, and they want to keep selling the product in order to get that money back. And with the subsidy they're receiving based on the tax system, that's how they gain their market share. They can make sales tax arguments. You pay more tax on a Mercedes than you pay on a Ford. That's absolutely true, but that's sales tax, not excise tax. You pay more sales tax on Coors than you pay on Keystone, but you pay the same amount of excise tax. You pay more sales tax on Opus One over $2 Chuck wine, but you pay the same amount of excise tax. You pay more sales tax on Chevron Supreme than you do on Arco Regular, but you pay the same amount of excise tax. You pay more sales tax on Skoal than you do on Longhorn, but you pay different excise taxes. So it's the only excise tax that's different in that capacity, and that's not the sales tax. They can talk about the little guy who won't have cheap products available to them anymore. Even if you move to weight-based, as this legislation proposes, there will still be over a $3 difference at retail between the highest and the lowest products. Therefore, there will still be cheaper products available. You might also hear that states that have switched to a weight-based system have lost money. Not one of the states that has switched from an ad valorem to a weight-based system has lost money in this category. They've all gained revenue and continue to gain revenue. You might hear the excise taxes are an outdated policy.
Excuse me, while we're on that point, let me ask the next obvious question. Has unit volume gone down in those states?
No, Mr. Chairman, unit volume has not gone down.
One of the interests of this, of at least some members of this committee, is to reduce the amount of tobacco addiction, which we believe usually begins by very young people using tobacco products. And part of our object is not only to raise money, but also to reduce the introduction by young people who below the legal age for consumption of tobacco products. And so that's why I keep asking these kinds of questions. If you have any data on that subject, we'd love to hear that too.
Mr. Chairman, I personally don't have any data with me on that, but I can get you some sources where you can find out information on that. The one thing I will point out, that if you move to a weight-based system at $1.68 an ounce, what loss they have to take to sell this product currently at 49 cents, that loss now becomes significantly larger under a weight-based system, which doesn't make it impossible to do, but it makes it significantly more difficult to market products in this kind of a price range in order to gain market share, because you will have to, you'll be losing over $2 a can at that point, and that's hard to make up in volume, as they say.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Empirically, if you've got a weight tax on a 49-cent can retail and or wholesale, let's call it a 30-cent wholesale can and a $3 wholesale can, but they both weigh the same and you've got the same tax based upon weight, then they're both going to be paying the same amount of tax at that particular point.
I think that's Mr. Williams' point.
Exactly.
Yes.
And consequently, I think those folks who can only afford the lesser brand are going to have to come up with more money. I think in answer to your question...
Or forego the product.
Empirically, they would have to forego the product because it would be that much more expensive to them.
Right. Thank you, Representative Butler. And the reason for my question was that that seems logical to me, and the question is, do we actually have data that supports or detracts from that reasonable idea? Whether it's true or not is different from whether it's reasonable or not. Please go ahead, Mr. Williams.
And Mr. Chairman, I believe that there are studies that indicate that the price of the product will dictate how much is consumed, and that issue is there. So by raising the prices of all these lower-end products, using the excise to bring it up to a level playing field for excise taxes, you will definitely increase the retail selling price of those cheaper products, which I would have to assume, based on those studies would have some impact on the consumption. You also hear that these excise taxes are outdated. The fact of the matter is every state has excise taxes on different products, as you well know here. And the federal government even taxes these products based on a weight, not a price of the product. You might also hear that this is simply an issue about UST's market share is declining.
Excuse me, what is the federal tax now?
I'm not sure what it's about. I don't want to quote you. I can get to that, too.
Thank you.
It's so much per pound.
Yes,
there.
Thank you.
You will also hear that UST's market share is going down in the premium category, and that's why they want this proposal to go through, so they can gain market share. The fact of the matter is UST's market share is still good. We want to compete on a fair basis. Right now, we are not competing. And since 2001, with the introduction of these products, the state subsidizes these products. And we have products in all these lower categories also. And we're more than willing to bring it all up and make it level. We don't want subsidies from the taxes to support different products. We want the marketplace to decide who wins and loses, who gains market share, who loses market share, simply by the products that are manufactured and the prices that those companies establish based on a fair and equitable playing field. I can spin that the other way for the opponents. They don't want to give up their subsidy so they can keep and gain the market share they're getting based on the subsidy the ad valorem tax system provides. This is not good excise tax policy. Like products, pay like tax, and that's all we're asking for here. The bottom line is the state subsidizing cheap tobacco products and losing a substantial amount of revenue. The state's tax system allows these cheaper products to be sold at the prices that they're currently sold at. We would like the playing field to be leveled from an excise tax perspective like it was prior to 2001. Let the marketplace determine who wins and who loses. The state will gain revenue. Your revenue will be flat, become more stable. You'll know how much you're going to get from year to year because the number of cans sold is fairly well. You can come up with that number, but none of you, and including myself, can tell you what all the companies, the four companies involved, will price their products at next year. And that pricing structure is what determines how much tax you get, and that shouldn't be something you're concerned with. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Williams? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me, if this proposal were to pass, what our taxes would be compared to neighboring states?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum.
I mean, how does the scheme that you're proposing compare to our neighboring states?
The state of Washington currently has a 75% ad valorem tax right now. They used to have 129.4% tax, but that created huge problems with the black market and smuggling and cross-border issues, so they lowered it again. So you will be fairly comparable to them. There's also a proposal in the Washington state budget to go to a weight-based version in Washington. to the south in California. It's still an ad valorem basis. It's about 47% of the wholesale price. So they would be a little bit lower than you at this time, and even after this proposal, but not significantly. Nevada is lower than you are right now, but they are also looking at a weight-based proposal. Idaho, off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I think it's about 30% in Idaho is their ad valorem rate.
Thank you.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, do we know anything about the science behind the addictiveness of the tobacco, that is, nicotines and tar, inside each of these cans? I've heard recently that over the last number of years, the amounts of nicotine has increased in tobaccos, cigarettes. Do we know anything about the addictiveness, one can versus another, relative to the amount of nicotine that they either have now in comparison to one another, or is it increasing or decreasing based upon the tobacco production?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I can't speak to all the different products on the nicotine level. I can tell you for UST's products, nicotine, from what I've been told by them and looked into from them, occurs naturally in tobacco plants, and that's, in UST's products, that's the only nicotine level that's in them, is what naturally occurs. As far as the other products are in the marketplace, I really can't speak to people's, what they do in their manufacturing process.
Mr. Chair, that is responsive, but except that I know that that's like saying beef is beef, but there's differing calibers and qualities of beef. It's my understanding that they can actually increase by genetically modifying the tobacco plant the amounts of nicotine that and tars that are in it. And that's my concern, is that could it be that one is more addictive than another? And if we don't know that, then we can go there. The other thing I would like to just call to the attention of the committee, Mr. Chair, and perhaps somebody's going to mention this, but tobacco, while it is not grown easily in the state of Oregon, is actually grown by quota for the people that grow tobacco. And the quota is on the basis of numbers of tenths of an acre. A tenth of an acre will grow a huge amount of tobacco. And so my concern is that if John Doe wanted to create a tobacco company and come forward and grow 5 acres of tobacco, he could probably supply this kind of stuff right here in huge volumes at very low prices to the state of Oregon. And it would be something like this, 49 cents. It could come on the market in extremely high quantities at very cheap prices. As I say, if you can get another tenth of an acre of quota, it's a real boon to you if you live in South Carolina.
Thank you, Representative Butler. We do have several witnesses on these bills, so I'd like to finish up the questions for Mr. Williams and then move on. Are there other questions for Mr. Williams? Thank you, sir, and thank you, Mr. Oxley. We appreciate your testimony today. The next witness is Ms. Dresser.
And, Mr. Chair, I would hope that somebody will be able to tell us how much the federal tax is on moist tobacco.
I think Mr. Williams has agreed he'll get that for us.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll get that for you by the end of the day.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And if you had some other people you wanted to bring with you, that would be fine.
Dr. Malcone is here from the Department of Human Services and may be able to ask if there's technical questions. My name is Courtney Dresser. I'm with the American Cancer Society, and I'm here on behalf of the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon, which is a coalition of folks including the Cancer Society, the Lung Association, and the American Heart Association. We are actually here to oppose House Bill 2968. First of all, we haven't heard quite yet some of what the impacts of smokeless tobacco is on health. I think many people think of cigarettes as the true danger, but smokeless tobacco is a very harmful product. It's very addictive. And we know that people, that this can cause cancer and heart disease and stroke, and that obviously oral cancer is a major problem with using smokeless tobacco products. We also know that smokeless tobacco products do contain nicotine and cause nicotine addiction for children and new users. Most of the time the new users are children or new youth. Use of these products can lead to a lifetime nicotine dependency. And we know that a report in the Journal of American Medical Association calculated that smokeless tobacco users who use, dip, or chew 8 to 10 times a day basically are exposing themselves to the same amount of nicotine as people who smoke 30 to 40 cigarettes a day. Many times, folks who are trying to quit smoking use these products as a way to help ease their transition, and we know that this is not a way to, this is not an alternative to smoking in any way, shape, or form.
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that last sentence?
Some people who are trying to quit have sometimes been told that using these products will help them ease their transition from smoking a cigarette to using smokeless tobacco products, but we know that it's the same issues. They'll have the same withdrawal effects as anyone going through a nicotine.
Simply another application of nicotine.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, smokeless tobacco products contain about 28 cancer-causing agents and does cause human cancer. And we also know that adolescents who use smokeless tobacco are more likely to become cigarette users in their adult years. According to the National Cancer Institute, smokeless tobacco generally has more nicotine per typical dose, one cigarette compared to one pinch of moist snuff. And all major health organizations, the U.S. Surgeon General, the National Cancer Institute, and the Centers for Disease Control all agree that smokeless tobacco use is not a safe substitute for smoking. As you've been told, there's only a few states that actually have this. I have eight. I think someone said a state just recently signed on to this weight-based system, which would make it very difficult for our state to compare itself to others, which we do quite often when we talk about tobacco taxes. And also, I think this would be a very difficult administrative being to tax one certain product a different way than everything else, which would make it difficult to and complex within the tobacco tax code. Most of Oregon's neighboring states, as was mentioned earlier, do not have the weight-based system. However, they've all gone through, are in legislative sessions and have seen this. This is something that UST is proposing nationwide and each state they can. Washington is fighting it, as you've heard. Right now they're at a 75% of the taxable sales price. Idaho rejected the UST proposal in their legislative session, which ended about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they are still at the 40% of the wholesale price. It's important to understand what tobacco taxes do in the first place. First, it is to gain revenue. Most importantly, to gain revenue to offset some of the costs that the state has to use to take care of these people that are sick with this disease, that are related to tobacco products. And second, it's to prevent, and one of the most important things is to prevent and reduce the use of it. The more we, the higher the prices, what we know for sure, the higher the prices, the less people will start. So the people who are not smoking now, which are children and youth, won't be starting.
Does the association believe that is true for these kind of products as well as for cigarettes?
Correct.
Okay.
We do.
Would you talk a little?
The same research that says that tobacco, that says if you increase the price by 10%, the price of a cigarette by 10%, you're going to reduce the youth using by 6 to 7%. The same research is true and holds up for smokeless tobacco products as well.
Thank you. And one of the points that was made by the previous witness was that changing over to a weight-based tax system would have the effect of probably of increasing the price at the low end. because as he pointed out, when you lower the wholesale price, the amount of the tax also goes down, and so there's an advantage to low cost to the low cost products. Would you talk about that issue a little bit and how it is that you disagree with that argument and yet at the same time make the argument that higher prices reduces consumption?
The most simple answer to that is that the higher price items that would not be affected, that are right now the higher price items that they have that would not be affected, are the most popular choices among youth.
And do we have documentation of that? Thank you.
Yeah.
We'd like to see that when it's available.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes, please. Follow up, Representative Berger.
I've been trying to phrase this question. Are they most popular among youth because of marketing or because of price? Or have you studied that?
I would say marketing, but I don't know if I have a scientific research
answer. So this begs the question. If suddenly the market were to change and 49 cents snuff were becoming the teenage idol, would your opinion change on this?
No, because there's also the issue of the revenue, and revenue from tobacco taxes goes to several major portions of public health, and this type of tax-based system does not stand up to inflation. We're going to lose money in the long run, and less money will be coming into this state if we go to this way. So,
is that responsive?
Yes, that kind of explains what we're talking about.
Thank you. Go ahead.
To best promote overall public health and reduce state tobacco-caused harms and cost, all tobacco products, including cigarettes and smokeless products, should be taxed at a high and comparable rate. This is not necessarily the right time to be doing things like this, too, with our tax code, especially around tobacco products. This smokeless tobacco market is really the only market around tobacco products that is actually on the rise, as things like smoke-free states, which I hope Oregon will be one soon, and things of that nature and changes in social means and a sense of where people can actually smoke change, these products are coming out in waves. There's everything now from actual gel that with nicotine you can rub on your hands, which would be considered a moist snuff product. This, without knowing all the new products coming down the pipeline, without knowing all the scientific evidence of what harm those products will cause, we shouldn't be giving any segment of the market a limiting tax liability issue like this one would. This measure would do. And I also provided some photos of some products that are there. I don't have that right in front of me, but you all do. There are some new products now that are even a little bit cleaner looking than the regular chew that we're all used to. Small little pouches that some of the companies call snus. And these little products weigh very little, and according to my calculations, would cost very little or be taxed at very little if they weigh only grams. So I would say if this body is looking for a way to gain revenue, which I believe it is, and also to deter people from using these products, which I believe it is, you have that answer already in House Bill 2201. 2201 would increase the price of tobacco products because it would increase the wholesale tax by 30% and also the cigarette tax by 84.5 cents. And it would provide revenue to the Oregon's Tobacco Prevention Education Program. And if we're truly looking to raise revenue and to deter children from smoking and to help people quit, that is your answer right there, not this. So, again, TOSCO and the American Cancer Society request that you take no further action on this bill.
Thank you. Further questions? One of the issues that it seems as though the primary issue here has to do with a discussion between the proponents and opponents of this bill over which system of taxation will actually both raise revenue for us and affect the consumption of this kind of product. I've been sitting listening to this, and of course I've been lobbied before the meetings about these issues, and I'm wondering, since we don't know what products might be coming out, you've indicated some kind of new kinds of products that may be coming out that where a weight-based system doesn't work very well, where potentially a price-based system might work better. What would your response be to a suggestion that we use both and that we collect whichever is higher?
Well, I'd have to take that back to the coalition and look at that. But
discuss it.
Discuss it.
Because you've raised a number of very interesting issues about the what I take it to be a limitation on the tax at the high end. Because as prices increase at the high end, the ad valorem tax increases, but the per ounce tax does not. So an ad valorem tax would continue to increase. On the other hand, when you use an ad valorem tax on low-priced products, it returns fewer dollars, and it does not contain the disincentive that I think many of us would be interested in based on price. On the other hand, if we applied a weight tax on the low-priced products and an ad valorem tax on the high-priced products, we would get the best of both worlds, would we not? We would collect more dollars at the low end and at the high end. The tax would not be limited because it would increase as the price went up on the high end, and we'd be guaranteed a floor based on the weight. A suggestion I'd like you to take back to your people. I have to tell you that I personally have a strong interest in limiting the use of tobacco products by those who are below legal age for the consumption of tobacco on the theory that that reduces the number of addicts that we have later in life, which I believe to be a very important public health issue. And so if I can figure out a way to tax these products so that we can have that outcome, I'd be in favor of it. Other questions for this witness, Representative Berger?
I guess I'm not as familiar with these products as maybe somebody else is, and it took, you know, about three conversations up here for me to figure out that what you're talking about is the stuff that the kids put in their lip and then they spit it out.
Some spit, some don't have to now. There's actually ones where it's almost like putting a little small tea bag in your mouth and you just kind of suck on it, I guess.
Okay, once I got over that.
Which took a few minutes.
Or you can just, you know, put the gel on your hands and call it a day.
So. Okay.
Lots of options.
It's clear to me that, I mean, your argument that market is going up for these products, and it's counterintuitive to me that you wouldn't want to tax the cheap stuff to keep the kids from getting hooked on it. But what you're saying is tax the expensive stuff because that's the stuff they like. And I'm a little confused in there with your argument because let me put it this way. I'm not persuaded by your we want to compare apples to apples in terms of what other states do in this. Throw that argument out and don't go there with me. And maybe somebody else persuaded. Tobacco is about the most studied thing on the face of the earth, and more statistics are not the answer here. I'm also not, kind of persuaded by, I want to raise the price because I want more money out of this product, okay? So let's go back to what we're taxing and how we're taxing it and the fairness issue, and the other desire on my part is to make it harder for people to start, young people. And this is an entry product. I understand that. Young people, for some reason, think that putting it in your mouth is something they want to do, but it's okay. So if you go to lower weight, if it weighs less, is it more potent or less potent and more addictive and less addictive? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I think the question is leading to a very good statement about its ability to abuse the system.
You're not answering my question. Are you?
I'm kidding.
Okay.
We don't know due to federal law, it's trade secrets, how much nicotine and how much of everything goes into each. We can't say that this has more than that. You can't do that under, we can't research that under.
So when they weigh it, what are they measuring?
They're weighing their product, their
bait. The amount of product that is inside
that. Who knows what's in it? I mean, we'd study some of it. We know there's about, I mean, they
does the federal government not monitor? And I mean, it may
there's be no regulate. The FDA, no one has regulations over tobacco products in any way. Federal government has no regulations. They monitor your macaroni and cheese more than they monitor what your kids
are
smoking.
So it's tobacco in there is what it is, what it says.
Well, it's tobacco products and also everything else that they put in, just like a cigarette. Lots of other products besides tobacco and cigarettes. A lot of other things besides nicotine.
But if it weighs more, there's more tobacco in it. I mean, it's tobacco, okay? So why would taxing it less lead to... I'm sorry, I'm getting lost in my own argument, but I'm totally confused by this testimony, to tell you the truth. If it weighs more and is taxed less, how does that help you get kids off of it?
That's another version of my question.
Yeah, okay.
And I appreciate you asking it again.
If it weighs more and has lower taxation, which allows you to have lower price. I mean, price and tax... There's a connection. Okay, so it weighs more, but is taxed less. How does that help us get kids off of it? From a health standpoint. Because you're the health people.
And I think the doctor wants to weigh in.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the state epidemiologist at the Public Health Division, and I'm also here to testify in opposition to this bill. I'll try to shed some light on this. It is actually quite confusing, and I'm sympathetic to the struggles that you're having with this. I think the way I think about this actually goes back to the point that you made, Representative Berger, about what's driving the teenage consumption around this. We know that despite the fact that the premium products cost more, substantially more, I mean, you heard testimony about how much more they cost, about two-thirds of the youth market are these premium products. So there's price is a factor, but it is not the only factor by any means. Any of you who have teenagers in your house, or I guess we all were once teenagers, know that teenagers like the snazziest, newest thing. And so marketing plays an enormous role in the choice of these products, even in a way that might be counter to the price effects that you'll see. This is also true with regard to the newest products that are being monitoring, and Ms. Dresser mentioned that. These are the newer things that are coming on the market that are being very aggressively marketed and to kids, and it's precisely this concern that changing the tax system would lead to more kids using tobacco, using smokeless tobacco, that's behind our stance in opposition to this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, because
yes,
this is just totally counterintuitive. Two-thirds of the market is the premium brands, okay? Dr. Cohn, if that were to flip in 2 years or 4 years and two-thirds of the market were the cheap stuff and there were all kids using it, would you be back here telling me we need to tax the cheap stuff more?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, I might be because I'm very concerned about kids starting this habit. We have about 425 cases a year of oral cancers in Oregon. This is a very serious and often deadly disease.
So, Mr. Chair, let me make clear. What you're basically... Oh, I know. I'm sorry. What you're basically saying is right now premium is king and you want kids off of it so you like the taxation, but if that were to change... You'd be looking at, and cheap working with the young people, you'd be looking at a way to tax it more.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, I can't speak in the theoretical completely, but our concern is keeping kids from starting in the first place. I should add also that if these cheaper products are in fact earning less money for the companies, which they must be, then there's going to be a lot less aggressive marketing because the companies won't have the money to put into it. It won't be profitable for them to do so. So I think it's unlikely that that flip is going to take place.
Thank you.
I know that you have another obligation.
I'm just all wrapped up in this.
We'll expect you back when you get back. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I do have another obligation, but I still am anxious about the science. Courtney, you're telling me that there's no way to know what's in one of these cans versus another, or it's a trade secret. I read Reader's Digest, and Reader's Digest tell me that the nicotine is up 10%. Now, if Reader's Digest knows, some doctor in this state sure as hell knows, and some scientist can tell me. And I want to know what's happening to the nicotine. Is it going up? Is it going down? What is happening to the tars? Are they going up? Are they going down? What about the health of these issues? Because if they are making them more addictive, and if they are making them cheaper and more addictive, then that's where you're going to have your greatest market impact. And if you can do that at 49 cents a can, I think we'd ought to know that as compared to the folks, I've got some serious questions about this. Two-thirds of the youth, and I'm not sure what a youth is, if that's under age 21 or under age 25, but if I stood at a store counter and counted 300 cans of this stuff being sold, you're telling me that 200 of those cans would be going out to young people versus someone over 21 or over 25. I don't know that that's the case. I have an interest in some of these kinds of convenience stores, and that isn't our experience. So I need to have a little bit more information about both the science and the sales issues. I think there's a lot of numbers being thrown around here, and then I'm being told, or we're being told, that we can't tell you about how much tar and nicotine is in this one versus this one over here. I need to know that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Doctor, you also indicated you wanted to testify on the bill, and I think we ought to let you go ahead and do that.
Chair Barnhart, thank you. I just have a few other very quick points to make. One is that, over time, inflation is going to increase the price of any product. That's just a natural thing that's going to happen. And that means that if you have a weight-based tax that is fixed like this, the percentage of the overall price that tax contributes to is going to become less and less, and it's going to be less and less of a deterrent, again, to people using this product. So I think that's another argument against the weight-based approach. With that, I do have written testimony I will distribute, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time. And I'm sorry, I may have interrupted you before you were finished.
No, I'm done.
You are. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for this panel?
I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Mark Nelson.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco. We appear today in opposition to House Bill 2968. R.J. Reynolds Tobacco also owns a subsidiary called Conwood, which is a producer of a manufacturer of smokeless tobacco. Mr. Chairman, the United States, let me just start for a minute, take you to the packet that's being handed out. And if I could, to the last page. You were shown by previous witnesses what is typically is what we know is a round tin can of smokeless tobacco. And, Mr. Chairman, I would take you to the picture that you will see in the back of your packages that are being taken out. It looks like this. And it's anything but only a small round tin can. It comes in a variety of different packages, a variety of different sizes, a variety of different weights, all the way down to 2 ounces. pouches that are being marketed now. So I want to make it clear the variety of products that we are talking about as we move forward with this. United States Smokeless Tobacco launched a nationwide campaign a couple years ago to change the way moist snuff is taxed. And they have been lobbying the 40-some-odd states, actually a little bit more, than to change from an ad valorem tax to a weight-based tax, as you have heard today. And, of course, Oregon today taxes their product, moist snuff, at 65% of the wholesale sales price. As has been indicated to you, the ad valorem tax is a very efficient, cost-effective way to tax a variety of different styles and packages and weights and of product. And I think if you ask the Department of Revenue if they had their druthers, whether they prefer from a simply processing and administration point of view, what they would prefer, ad valorem, which is a set percentage of the price, or this weight-based, they would tell you that it's the ad valorem. I should also indicate that I think you were shown a round can today with a 49-cent can. And I think the indication was that, or the implication was that they did not pay the full tax on that 49 cents. They only paid 65 cents of the 49 cents. That's not correct. They pay 65% of the regular price. That is my understanding. In addition to our major competitor also has their own 99 cent brand of the 49 cent piece that they also market to everyone. But having said that, if you go to page 2 of the first chart that I have, you can see the ad valorem tax in Oregon as it has progressed since 1997. And you can see the built-in inflationary factor that is there that makes the ad valorem tax approach so important. You don't have to come back in and I know this sounds strange, Mr. Chairman, coming from me, but you don't have to come back into the legislature and pass a bill to raise the price of this particular product, because it does so by inflation and by the fact that you are using an ad valorem approach as opposed to a weight base, which if you wanted to increase the weight base from the $1.68 that the proponents of this bill talked about today, you would have to come in with a bill in the legislature and pass that by a 3/5 vote to increase the cost of that product or the tax on that product. And I think that's very important. But this is all about market share. Smokeless, USTT has lost market share in this country. And that is why it has come and moved this proposal forward. It has lost market share to lower-priced brands, and that is correct. And that is why this particular proposal is before you. I'll take you to the next piece, Mr. Chair, which says Postscript. And this is put out by Tobacco Control. And I've highlighted some parts there. First, on the first column, the new tax will not only fall short of the projected additional revenue, but also generate less revenue than under the previous ad valorem tax. Then they go on to say, although a prime rationale for the taxation change was to raise the price of cheap snuff, thus discouraging youth from buying it, and that has been what the proponents are saying, most of the youth who use moist snuff use premium brands. Indeed, data from the 2004 NSDUH show that more than two-thirds of youth, not total buyers, youth snuff users reported usual use of premium, not discount brands. In particular, UST, Skoal, 40.3%. Now, these are 40.3% of youth. And Copenhagen, 23.6%. So it is their premium brands, and we also have a premium brand. And they use that too. But it is their premium brands, in fact, that meet that two-thirds amount. So all the data says, it's sort of like the Nike phenomenon, as I've indicated to some of you, is you don't go out and buy some pair of tennis shoes that you've never heard of. You're out there buying Nike or Adidas. People like Adidas. But this is what's happening in this market. So, in fact, if you go to weight base, what you're doing, you're keeping your top premium brands here, and you're raising
and narrowing the difference between the top premium brand and the discount or the lower brand, and becomes even more attractive because there's less of a spread in the cost. And that's what the studies say, and I wish Representative Berger was here to hear that, because that is what happens as you raise, you leave the premium brand, including one of ours, at the current tax amount. You raise everyone else's, some of them by as much as 200%. You narrow that spread between the premium and Tier 2 and Tier 3, and you make that premium even more attractive. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, this measure is before you today. You also have, as I've handed out, a campaign for tobacco-free kids discussion, and this comes out of their national office, of why spit tobacco should be taxed at a percentage of wholesale price. Let me just take you to one that comes from there, one statement that comes from their studies. A few states tax on a per weight basis. This approach has been pushed aggressively by United States Tobacco, primarily to reduce the effective tax rates on the higher price premium product it sells, while raising the effective tax rates on the lower price spit tobacco products primarily sold by UST's competitors. That's in the second paragraph. By reducing the prices of UST's best-selling products, or flattening them out, which are also the smokeless tobacco products most popular with youth, this tax change would promote even higher levels of smokeless tobacco use by kids, which can lead to abbreviated lifetime of addicted smoking. And then this is, you'll notice, it's footnoted. Again, in the middle portion there is a discussion of why we need to be taxing on a ad valorem basis as opposed per weight. And that goes back to the difficulty and the way people can, with different packaging, actually scam the tax collector in terms of moving different ounces in different packages. This is not about a tin can. It's about a growing different type of packaging that is happening throughout the state or throughout the country. I've also provided a piece from American Lung Association, also in opposition. Mr. Chairman, you talked about the strong interest in reducing youth access at the beginning. We believe very strongly that this, in fact, is going exactly in that direction by the current marketing and the current purchasing trends of young adults, youth under 18. So it is important what we are taxing. And again, we believe that the ad valorem is the simplest, most effective way to capture. It has a built-in inflation factor. And I provide Mazin with a Maryland revenue projection. And they did indeed see a slight increase in general fund revenue in the first 2 or 3 years. And then that inflation versus what they had then that inflation factor gets caught up, and you just see a downward trend in actual dollars. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, there have been some states in the past couple of years, I think there are about 9 states that have passed this measure, but it's also been rejected in many, many, many other states: Idaho, New Mexico, Wyoming, Arkansas, North Carolina, Maryland, Virginia, Iowa did pass. Nebraska, it was vetoed, but they continue to lose most of the states in which this measure is in when it has a full review. And again, it is complicated, but I think that you will find that the ad valorem tax is the fairest tax, and in terms of prohibiting access by youth, the ad valorem tax works out a lot better than this approach. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. The questions, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, do you know how much this we've had questions about the federal tax on tobacco, how much it is per pound?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I don't know, but I can find out. It's important to note that that is, as I understand it, a tax on bulk tobacco, and is not a tax on as it relates to, there is a tax on cigarettes, but as it relates to, I don't think they tax it by the can or by the pouch. I think it's by bulk.
By weight.
I understand.
Follow-up question, if I
yes,
may.
Yes, please.
So, Mark, one of the discussions we're having, the chair mentioned something that I think I'd like to follow up on, and that is we tax certain things by the OTP is taxed right now by a percentage of the wholesale price, and we tax the package of cigarettes. Both those packages of cigarettes are taxed equally. What would happen if we just changed Oregon's entire system of taxation so it was the greater of the two taxes based upon either the wholesale price or the weight, and had that for cigarettes as well as wet tobacco? What would happen then? I mean, you're from RJR and the expert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I suggest both Gary Oxley and I would both be up here together testifying in opposition. I don't mean to be funny. If your goal is to, and you believe that you can limit access to youth by preventing access by raising the price on both the low cost and the high cost, then that is an answer. I mean, that is an option for you. We believe that the current system, by if you look at market share numbers, I mean, in Oregon, for example, in terms of premium, USST has 87% of premium sales in Oregon. Only 13% are other brands. On the flip side, in terms of access, in terms of Tier 1 and Tier 2, there's only 9% by USST in the lower priced and 91% in all others. And if you look at those numbers, you begin to understand why they're here and why we're here in opposition because of that where we are in this market. But, again, back to your question, that's an option for you, a policy option for you to look at.
Mark, I was just handed a note that somebody did research this. The federal tax is 58.5 cents per pound, and on tobacco, according to this note, or 4.4 cents per 1.2 ounce can of federal tax.
Okay.
And we've heard testimony that it's going to be very, very difficult to make these calculations and to make these computations. If the federal government can do it and start off with a by weight calculation of tax, why would it be difficult for us to move in Oregon to a by weight?
Well, you again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, you can go there, and what I'm trying to point out is where I think the fallacies. They have, in fact, done that for you, and I believe their number was $1.68 that they want to put in that blank, and per ounce. And again, what you see are what they've been showing is 1.2 ounces per can. But again, as I've indicated, there's all kinds of different sizes. That's in effect what their proposal is. Like you say, you broke the federal down to 4.5 cents or whatever that is. They've brought it down to basically it's going to be $1.68 per ounce. Again, our argument in opposition to that is the variety of different packages that you have in sizes and weights that you're going to be dealing with, which the wholesalers have great difficulty with this approach, as do generally revenue collectors, revenue departments. But we argue that this is also an issue of children's access. And right now, you will narrow that spread, and you will increase the, as Representative Berger was trying to get to, you will actually decrease the spread and make those premium brands, which USST primarily makes and dominates the market, as I've just indicated by the percentages, will make it more attractive to youth.
Mr. Chair, just one final question, if I may, in this regard, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but I really would like to know this. Who buys the 49 and 59 and 69 cent can of tobacco that we've had testimony that this has gone from 0% of the market share to 36% of market share? Who is buying that today? What's young, old?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I may have heard differently. 49 cents is not 35-38% of the market, I guarantee you. I'm not sure what context they were putting that in when they were, but it's not. Those are introductory types of offers which all the companies, including USST, make. You might have a store, you have a new product, you have a store that is not, you know, carrying your product, so you come in and you offer, you know, five cases.
If I may, I think the testimony was that the cheap, and that's the quote, tobaccos went from, products went from 0 to 38% of the market share between 2001 and 2006. I don't think they said that it was the 49 cents,
right,
but the lower cost ones.
Right.
And I think the question is still a valid one that Representative Butler asked, and that is who actually is using these lower cost tobacco products.
Typically, like I was describing, as I understand it, and we've just, you know, we've owned this company for only a couple years, is if you have a new product, you take it out and you try to get a store to place it, to put it on the rack. And so you might give them five packs of...
I'm sorry, I don't think that's responsive to the question.
Okay.
The question was who's buying these?
Well, it's people who come into that store who has been offered these introductory kinds of packets and at those prices. And I think it can be any kind. It can be if youth has access or an older brother or anybody who is a natural buyer or who uses product like this will come and buy it at that lower price.
I'd like to follow up, if
sure.
I may, on the question that Representative Berger was asking earlier, and I think I know the answer to it, so I'm going to say it that way and see if you agree. It doesn't seem to me that there's any relationship between the tax and the amount of nicotine in the product, regardless of whether you base it on price or weight of the product, because a product may have a very large amount of nicotine in it and be fairly lightweight, and be fairly high cost or low cost and also have lesser or more nicotine in it. What's your understanding of that issue?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is very limited, but I think you are correct. I don't think there's any...
So we're not actually taxing nicotine amount in either...
No.
Under either approach.
Right. You're taxing product. And in Oregon now by a percentage of its price. And its price is relative to the quality of the tobacco that's being put in, and also I would assume other marketing costs that go into the development of that price.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Nelson? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
On this bill. Deborah Buchanan, are you here? Oh, you are. Clear in the back.
Mr. Chair, my hope is that Deborah Buchanan can tell us a little bit about the way that tobacco accounting is done. Maybe not directly, but I know that the reports are voluminous of each of these tobacco houses, and they have to do calculations of the equivalency amounts and those kinds of things. I just like
right.
to know that the method of one method over the other,
right.
whichever is the higher, could be ascertainable.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Representative Butler, that sounds very much like an alternative minimum tax for... We can do whatever you ask us to do, Mr. Chair, and Representative
Good answer.
Butler, although it may not be within reason as far as cost, but we can certainly look at that. Mm-hmm. I did want to just speak to the bill itself and to some issues that you might consider as far as administration.
Yes, and that's what we'd like you to speak about. Thank you.
The definition of moist snuff is different in this bill than what we have seen in other states. I don't know that that's significant, but it's just something that we did note. Other states have generally used a definition that says, for example, moist snuff is something that is not that is intended to be dipped in the oral cavity, and this says that it is not intended to be smoked or placed in a nasal cavity. Perhaps those are not significant, but they are different than what we have seen in all of the other states, at least that I have looked at.
Well, ours would cover the hand cream, wouldn't it? And the other ones would not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that gets to my next point, and that is intent is often very different depending on who is defining that. So if you were to go ahead with this, it probably would be helpful to us to have rulemaking authority to define what is intended to be smoked or placed in a nasal cavity so that we could at least define that by rule. Implementation. There's no specific implementation date on this. It's always easier for us if something is implemented at the beginning of a month or even at the beginning of a quarter, because they do report quarterly to us. That would be helpful. At some point in the future, we might consider stamping of these products, similar to what we do with cigarettes. If we had something in the bill that would allow us that flexibility to institute stamping requirements in the future, we would very much appreciate
that.
That's
part of your rulemaking authority, I think, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
thank you.
Uh-huh.
The bill also notes that the weight of the product, and I'm looking on page 3, it says it's based on the net weight determined by the manufacturer. I'm presuming that we would have authority to verify that and not be bound by what the manufacturer says it is. But again, that could be clarified a bit.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, those are all the comments I had, unless you have questions, and I would be happy to talk with program and come back to you as to how it would work to do the method you've discussed.
Well, one of the additional questions I'd like you to look at is the difficulty of switching from one method to another, and right now all of the other tobacco products are taxed the same way. With this bill, as I understand it, some would continue to be taxed on an ad valorem basis, and some would be taxed on the basis of being moist snuff. So that issue, the switching for part of them and not all of them, is an administrative issue, and I'd like to give us some sense as to what the complexity and cost of that would be. And then in addition, if I may, one of the the suggestion that I came up with a few minutes ago was that we simply apply both taxes and collect the one that's gets us the most money on each product. And it'd be useful to know what the cost of administering that kind of an approach would have, so that we don't get ambushed as we continue to look at this bill.
We will do that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I couple of items. Number one, right now we do tax some tobacco products, OTP, differently than we do all other OTP. That is, cigars are taxed based upon the stick, premium cigars. And then the second issue, Deborah, that I wanted to bring out was that I know that there I'm not sure who it is that does it in your shop over there, but I know that each of the wholesalers, and I'm not sure how many wholesalers there are statewide, each of the wholesalers of tobacco that are Oregon wholesalers, stampers and wholesalers, have to report the volume of not just the wholesale price times the 65%, but they also report the equivalent number of sticks of tobacco on roll your own. And so I know that there are additional reports that are presently coming in from those folks, and certainly as you receive a column that says, "Here's everything that we bought right here, and this is roll your own tobacco, and this is the moist tobacco," one can be done by dollar value, the other can be done by weight, perhaps on the same invoice, but for taxing purposes. But I personally, and you've seen them too, have looked at excise tax forms that show on a single excise tax form as many as 20 or 30 different methods of taxing each of the various kinds of items. One is in the trucking industry.
Representative Butler, we have several other hearings today, and I'd love to get onto them if we could.
But what I'm saying is it's not impossible for them to do this, and my interest is that we should have that ability to at least have testimony from the department back on the method of...
Let me say that we won't move on this bill without at least one additional hearing, so that the department can be heard, and if we have amendments, then others can be heard on the amendments. Is that satisfactory?
You bet.
Thank you, Representative. We appreciate that. Having given what I've just said today about additional hearings, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this bill today? Thank you very much. We will close the hearing on House Bill 2968, and we're going to open a hearing on House Bill 2967, we'll hear from Dr. Kahn.
Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn, state epidemiologist with the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services. And I'm here today to testify in support of this bill, which would eliminate the cap of 50 cent on tax on cigars and require that cigars are taxed at 65% of the wholesale price, which is currently the tax on other tobacco products. Cigars contain the same toxic and carcinogenic substances as other tobacco products, and we're very concerned about risks for cancers of the lung, oral cavity, larynx, and esophagus. Heavy cigar smokers and those who inhale deeply also may be at increased risk for heart disease and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. All of these are very serious health outcomes. And again, as with my testimony on the prior bill, our interest is in the effect on children. And I guess I would call your attention to what's in my written testimony about this. We don't have good Oregon data on the use of cigars, among children here. But we do know that in the United States as a whole, it's a fairly common phenomenon that kids experiment and try cigars. We know from Washington State that they've seen a steady and sizable growth in cigar use among 10th and 12th graders since 2000. And in 2006, they reported that over 24% of the 12th graders in Washington had smoked a cigar in the last 30 days. That's one in four. So again, these products, particularly when they're marketed to youth, which they often are, if you look at the cigars, that are available in the stores, many of them have candy flavors or fruit flavors. Some even have sugar in them that are designed to be appealing to youth. There's an aggressive marketing that's going on here, and anything that would raise the price of this product, again, we think would deter youth taking up this product, and that's why we're in support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Dr. Cohn? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony. We have a number of people who would like to be heard additionally, and I'm going to just simply take them in order. And please forgive me for bringing you up in panels. I know that our time is short, and I want to get everybody in if we possibly can. So starting at the top, Don McIntyre, it looks like Tom Hecker, and Tom, is it Morrow?
Moran,
thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, could Mazen please tell me when the 50 cent thing was enacted?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mazen. Give us a quick summary of this bill and answer that question.
This bill, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, eliminates the cap that currently exists on cigars. As you know, other tobacco products, including cigars, are taxed at 65% of wholesale price. With the exception of that, cigars will not pay more than 50 cents per cigar. So those premium cigars, if you will not at any time pay that 50 cents. That cap was established in 2002.
Okay, that's okay.
And cigars, I think, as we really don't have a very concrete handle on how much of OTP is cigar sales, but from other statistics from other states and from federal studies, we estimate it to be about 55% of OTP.
55%? So more than half of the total of all of the tobacco products is cigars. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Gentlemen, Mr. McIntyre.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I'm Don McIntyre. I'm here representing myself as a citizen and a cigar lover. I also am the principal of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. And since we're in front of a revenue committee, I think I have valid standing in both areas. First of all, I would like to hear from the committee, because the bill is sponsored by the committee. This is the sentence that is about to be excised by this bill is something that we fought three sessions to get through, because a broad array of us convinced the legislature that there'd be more revenue for the state if this became the law. The fact of the matter is, cigars are available throughout the world. They aren't available only in Oregon. The state of Oregon does not have a monopoly on cigar sales. If prices become prohibitive, you don't buy your cigars in Oregon. You don't do business here. Now, in our testimony back then, I think Jan Esler-Rowe from Cascade Tobacco held up a box of cigars, in fact, one of my favorite brands, and pointed out, after she showed you 200 cancer sticks, which are cigarettes, that the tax was like $6.35 on those 200 cigarettes, and held up 25 cigars, and the tax on the cigars was $125 for 25 sticks that you don't inhale. Now, we just heard testimony from a doctor, and I resent his testimony, because he gave you some kind of data about people inhaling cigars. Cigar smokers don't inhale cigars. Occasional fools do. You'll see anyone who smokes cigarettes a lot, they'll have a tendency to inhale a cigar just out of habit. But I don't smoke cigarettes, and I'm not addicted, and I'm not a teenager. And all I know is that if you blow away the 50-cent cap, which is reasonable, every little stick, the state gets 50 cents. Every time I light up, you get 50 cents. And I think there's going to be testimony that's going to show that revenue is accruing to the state. I know that the amount of revenue that you get from tobacco is pretty small potatoes compared to the big picture. But I'd like to just say this from a personal standpoint. One of the things that I really enjoy in life is having a nice smoke. I like a good glass of wine. Those are some of the pleasures in life. And in America, we are supposed to enjoy the pursuit of happiness. Now, I understand that there will be some of you on this panel, on the revenue panel, that maybe find cigars distasteful, and you want to maybe social engineer some of us out of them. It isn't going to happen. Now, I know that we have limited time, so I just wanted to do some show and tell. I got this for Christmas. This is there were four cigars in this box. They're now safely ensconced in the humidor. My stepson gave it to me, four cigars, $104. Now, if the 65 or if the 50 cent cap wasn't on there, I wouldn't have got this for Christmas. And certainly I wouldn't have got it purchased from an Oregon store. This was purchased at an Oregon store. It was available in North Carolina. That's where it would have come from, because that would have added about $65 to the cost of the present. I will finish up by saying my favorite cigar is a Fuente Don Carlos No. 2. Expensive cigar, and I can't afford to smoke them every day. I buy two boxes of them a year locally, and it's about $10 a stick. If that tax goes through, I ain't buying them here anymore, and I'll still be enjoying them, and the state will lose the revenue from that. And I don't think we have to worry about teenage smokers getting in to any cigar that hits the 50 cent cap. That's a false issue. It's a red herring. And so I'll end my testimony there, but just to show you, there's a catalog from Pennsylvania. Here's one from New York. And again, the state does not have a monopoly on these wonderful, little fine rolled pieces of tobacco that are very delightful to taste and we're not addicted to. We're addicted to companionship, a good conversation, and a nice cigar promotes that.
Thank you, Mr. McIntyre. Let's go ahead with this panel, and then we'll have questions for the entire panel at one time.
I'm Tom Moran. I own Rich's Cigar Store, and it's a Portland institution since 1894, 113 years in business.
Sorry, would you tell us the name of the store again?
It's Rich's Cigar Store.
Thank you.
And it started down on the waterfront at 2nd and Morrison, and in 1909, there were 132 cigar stores in downtown Portland. Now there's only one. And I've owned the store for 31 years. I bought it from Jesse Rich. We're also a great resource for our vast array of periodicals, and we're nationally written up. But when the Oregon tobacco tax was increased from 35% to 65%, our cigar sales decreased by more than $1 million in the first year. And figures from a report called The Tax Burden on OTP show Oregon cigar sales increasing annually from 2001, when the cap was put in, from 794,000 sticks to 2,228,000 cigars over the last 4 years. That's an annual. And the excise tax revenue over the same period increased from $496,000 to $1,114,000, a 124% increase. In the state of Washington a few years ago, when they raised their OTP tax to 129%, all but two cigar retailers went out of business. And they've since reduced their OTP tax to 75% and also imposed a 50-cent cap. When Oregon imposed the 50-cent cap, we had customers come back that we hadn't seen for years. They quit buying from us. They were buying mail order or from Indian reservations or elsewhere. But because we were competitive, they were buying from us again. I also want to say that I believe that if the cap is removed, we will go out of business. We won't be able to operate. We have 18 full-time employees, and we spend $894,000 in taxes, wages, and health benefits annually. So I don't think you want to lose that. That's all I have.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Tom Hecker. I don't represent anyone but myself. I'm a cigar smoker. I've smoked cigars since 1958. I'm very healthy. I take no drugs, no pills, no nothing. I disagree with what the honorable doctor said about inhaling. You don't inhale cigars. I also disagree with him with children smoking cigars. I was so glad to hear all the testimony on this Bill 2968 about everyone's concerned about youth. I have never, in all the years I've been smoking a cigar, saw a youth smoking a cigar. I have 9 children. I have 20 grandchildren. No one likes cigars. And, of course, we all worry about the youth. And when I was a youth, I never smoked a cigar, drank. And that's the truth, give or take a fib or two. So, but cigars and the youth, it just does not exist. I know. I get around. I have a business in Portland, and I've been smoking cigars. I buy a box of cigars a month. I buy a box of Ashton, and as Tom said here, before that 50-cent cap went in, I bought all my cigars by catalog. I'm inundated with catalogs. When the 50-cent cap went on, I went back and I started buying cigars from Tom. I buy Ashton's. I enjoy a fine cigar. It's one of the finer things in life. If you ladies don't take offense, if I can quote Winston Churchill, if I may. He said, a woman is a woman, but a fine cigar is a treat. And it is. A cigar... A cigar is a happy event. When my children were born, what do? We buy and we give away cigars. When a happy event, a graduation, whatever, it's a happy event. A cigar is a happy event. Unlike so many other things, a person smoking a cigar has a perpetual grin on his face. It's just a happy time. I buy my Ashton cigars for about $1.75 a box. I buy about a box a month. $175 a box. And so it comes about $12, $13 in taxes now. If you implement that 65% tax, it's going to go up to like $113 of tax that I'm not going to pay. And it's just as simple as that. Tom is a nice fella, and I love his cigar store, but I'll go back to the catalogs. And I think, I don't know if it's available, that or did you read it, how your revenue went up when you knocked the tax down. We'll just buy local. And so anyway, that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Hecker.
You're welcome.
We appreciate your testimony. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question for Tom Moran. Tom, I did a quick, brief hit to find out from the Internet the number of places that I could buy cigars earlier. I think there were 2,644 first click on the Internet that I could buy using my credit card. What's happened since 2002? When the tax went down to 50 cents in Oregon, with regard to the catalogs. We've heard a lot about these catalogs. Are there a lot of catalog sales that your customers are giving, being offered in addition to the over 2,600 opportunities to buy cigars? And incidentally, if you put in one kind of cigar, I didn't put in yours, Don, but I put in one kind of cigar. You can buy it on the Internet from 500 different places. I didn't check the price for clothing.
You might find it interesting to look up those Fuente Don Carlos number 2.
Yeah, I noticed that you wrote that down, but I'd like to know about the catalog sales. Is that proliferating, too?
Yeah, the catalog sales are increasing. But we're more competitive now. We're only slightly higher at the 50-cent cap, so we've gotten back a lot of the customers we had lost.
With the mailing costs, you're slightly more, but you're local and convenient, and that's where you get the business?
Right, and it's the experience of coming in the store and looking at the vast array of cigars.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
May I add one kind of minor point here? The doctor, honorable doctor that testified before, he said how there's nicotine put in the cigars. I toured several cigar factories in Havana several years ago, and I watched them making rolling cigars. They get a leaf, they roll it, they put a binder leaf on it, and then they put a wrapper leaf, three leaves. There is nothing but pure tobacco leaves that go into a tobacco or into a cigar. And I spent a week touring these different tobacco or cigar factories, and there's no additives put in fine cigars, unlike other tobacco products. So our youth is safe from cigars.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative Burke. Right,
thank you very much. First of all, we won't ask how you got to go to Havana. So
yeah,
don't ask, don't tell. This is more of a comment to Don. Don, great to see you back again. And just to tell you that if the value of those cigars, those individual cigars that you brought today, are less than $10, there's a few of us up here that might be willing to.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for your testimony. I will note we have about 6 minutes left in our time today, and I'm going to call the next panel and hope that we can get through this bill today. We obviously are not going to open on House Bill 3454 and House Bill 3261 today. Ken Howell, J.L. Wilson, and I guess I'll call the last two together, Jan and Stephen Rowe.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming forward, and I'm sorry, the indication is that 55% of all of our OTP taxes presently comes from the collection of cigars. I'd like to have a kind of a history of where that's come since 2000.
Let's ask for that information to arrive at a later time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative question of the staff, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
When these cigars are sold through these catalog sales or over the Internet, aren't they required to pay the same tax in Oregon that you would at a store?
Mr. Chair, with the OTP, it's a little different. With cigarettes, about 2 years ago, the Department of Revenue and the task force was able to shut down this cigarette buying through the internet, so they can't use credit cards to do that. With cigars, although they're required to pay it, but there are so many of them out there. That probably enforcement is a little more difficult. However, enforcement has been more effective with time. That's why it's sometimes difficult to know whether the increase was because of the 50 cents cap or because of more enforcement at that time. And here's the thin line that is not necessarily easy.
And what's the statute of limitations on the collection of these taxes, do you know?
3 years.
I think 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. J.L. Wilson, representing the Cigar Association of America on this bill. A lot of points have been covered, and I won't go into them. Obviously, we do not support 2967, and we don't think it's advisable precisely because the evidence shows that with regard to this tax policy, it hit the mark. Sales stayed in Oregon, and as a consequence, tax revenues grew. The 2001 legislative session, I was around and took an interest in this issue, and there's a considerable legislative record as it pertains to this issue, but three issues were talked about. The impacts on smoking, whether it would increase or decrease the use of tobacco products, whether the cap would help small companies in Oregon, and whether or not the cap would spur tax revenue collections to stay here in state. And basically what the consensus was is that this would not, in fact, spur additional demand for this product. What it would do is tap into existing demand and keep those sales here with our own small companies who retail these products. And you can see from the figures from the tax burden on OTP report just the explosive growth that that Oregon businesses were able to tap into, selling just under 800,000 premium cigars prior to the cap, and now we're almost three times that at 2.28 million cigars with the corresponding increase in tax revenue. So in terms of tax revenue and business policy, unlike a lot of things that pass, this hit the mark exactly as it was intended to do, and for that reason, we don't think it's advisable to pass this bill.
Thank you. Just to make it clear, it's your view that the tripling of sales in Oregon is not an increase in use in Oregon, but simply a sales coming home.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and members. That is our contention. Our notion is that we tapped into an existing Oregon demand, but just kept those sales here in Oregon.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Yes, I'm Janice LaRoe, Cascade Cigar and Tobacco. The cigar tax cap bill consumed three sessions of my life also. This bill did work. It brought home consumers were buying online. We still are educating customers that there is a cigar tax cap. You don't have to buy online. Give the state its due. This goes on and on. If that tax raises, all of these people will leave again. And to increase a tax is to assume that you just pass it on to the consumer, but they're not there across our counters. They left. And so I implore you, please do not take away that
store tax cap. Where is your
store? Southeast Portland, 82nd Avenue.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Ken Howell. I don't currently work for a cigar business per se, but I did work in the business for 16 years. I'm now a real estate agent, also going back to school to get my teaching credentials, which I'll have by October of next year, because I, too, am worried about the youth of tomorrow. With that said, I do want to point out a simple fact that it did take, as Jan stated, about 2 years to get the business back into the store once it all left to mail-order business. But I also, I'll have to apologize, I had about a food poisoning last night, so I'm a little out of my wit right now. But
It wasn't a cigar problem.
No. In fact, it's been a week and a half since I smoked.
Bad joke. I'm sorry. A very bad joke.
I'm a big fan of Don Carlos number two as well. But you could also go online, History Channel, and get this little documentary. Modern Marvels did a thing on manufacturing of tobacco products where it covers all of them. And the one point in there that I really want to stress is that cigars, of all the tobacco products created, and this, of course, will upset some of my past employers and friends, of all the stuff created,
cigars are the only one that are 100% natural. They're grown from the earth. They're aged naturally. They're rolled 100% tobacco. They don't have additives. They don't have preservatives. They don't put a bunch of garbage in it that makes it addictive. So it is the only non-addictive tobacco substance that you can buy. And that's crucial. It also doesn't appeal to youth. I don't know where that statistic came from, but my 16 years of work in there, other than myself, there were not a lot of young people coming in buying cigars. It's usually, you know, old coots like Tom Hecker over there that traditionally will smoke cigars on a regular basis. He says that. He doesn't.
Thank you. We are about out of time, and I see a question.
I have a question about the naturalness of cigars. Is that true of all cigars or only the expensive ones? And let me tell you why. There was kind of a statement that young people don't smoke cigars, and I hope my children aren't listening, but I've smoked a cigar once in my life. I was 16 years old when I did it, and it was a very cheap cigar.
Swisher Sweet.
It was a Swisher Sweet. Mm-hmm. Chose not to ever do that again. And my
good
children
choice.
I would assume that there would be bad stuff in there that we would not want kids. I wouldn't want kids listening to this hearing or other people to go away thinking kids should pick up cigars or adults and there are no bad health effects as a result of cigar smoking.
A lot of youth do tend to start with the cheaper cigars, which, by the way, will not be affected by the change of this tax because 50 cents is oftentimes actually more than the 65% tax per stick on that particular cigar. But those that will try to sample around with cigars and their youth like that, don't stick to it. One, it's a nasty product. It just isn't any good. And you also, again, do not inhale it, even though it is, I mean, you technically could because it's a very small tobacco product. It's actually a lot of paper product, a lot of garbage. Now, with that said, there are premium cigars, as the doctor had mentioned, that have a flavoring, oftentimes a pipe tobacco lacing or something in it to make it sweet. Honestly, I haven't seen it appeal to kids so much as I have to women. And of those tobacco products, I'd say less than 1% of them that actually sell through the store are flavored in any way, shape, or form. So it's not even a reasonable number to even take into consideration. So,
thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you very much for coming forward today and presenting your testimony. We appreciate it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
One thing was asked and commented relative to the tax that's due. Yes, the tax is due for those folks who choose to buy over the Internet or buy through the mail. But in like manner, the tax is due on every Washington resident who buys in Oregon any kind of grocery product or any other product of a retail value. So we've got this fluidity. It's a river. It's not a wall.
So if this bill were to pass, we'd have to send Ms. Buchanan to visit to Mr. McIntyre and Mr. Hecker in order to collect the tax. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to close the public hearing on this bill, HCR, our House Bill 2967, and we are adjourned. No.